Well, this is not intentional, not intentional, not intentional. But, you know, when a team is that bad, at least you should give their fans something to cheer about. Manchester United, after 6 games in the Premier League, I won't even talk about the points, but with a minus of 3 goals this season. It doesn't speak volumes of a club that is very much storied in the Premier League and even in European football and across the globe, heavily regarded as one of the best. How did they sink so low? Erik ten Hag got the goalkeeper he wanted. He got the defenders he wanted. He got the midfielders he wanted. He got a striker he wanted. And he got players he wanted out of the team out. But still, there is no identity with Manchester United. And it speaks volumes about how deep and low this team has sunk. We'll be getting into that. And that is why you should make your phones ready. You are going to start the show with me. Should we sack, or should Manchester United sack Erik ten Hag? Should he be shown the exit, Manchester United coach Erik ten Hag? My name is Kelvin Oluswanse, and welcome to Sports Ultra as well. This show is available as a podcast on all podcast channels on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all RSS feeds. You can catch up all the previous shows there, including this one. Well, all you need to know is that this show gives you everything this weekend and beyond that you need to know about sports. But we are going to focus a lot more on football this time around. Well, before we get into action, just like, let me open the phone lines. Manchester United fans, I want you all here. 0559-242-717. 0556-910-154. Should Erik ten Hag be sacked? Or do you think there is a problem that is coming from United, that's not Erik ten Hag, that needs to be addressed? But you can call right now, 0559-242-717 and 0556-910-154. This is Plus Ultras. Should Erik ten Hag be sacked by Manchester United after 3 seasons in charge of the team? There seems to be nothing impressive about how they are playing and what they are going to do in the next couple of years. So let me welcome your calls in here. But I have gentlemen who are going to help me today with the show. Yes, Belishan is here. So if you don't know and you want to know, but you don't know how to know, I am going to let you know that Belishan is the 28th Ghana Journalist Association Awards Disability Journalist of the Year. It's not impossible. The entire journalists in Ghana who are registered under the umbrella body, Ghana Journalist Association, he is the disability, you know, journalist of the year. And he was duly accorded and rewarded and awarded, and do I say acclaimed, and was stamped as the Disability Journalist of the Year 2024 at the 75th anniversary of the Ghana Journalist Association's 28th Awards. Belishan, congratulations to you, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
That is the man you are seeing on your screens. If you don't know Bale, just come on 3FM 92.7 and you can see Belishan right here on your screen. Ima, just put the award there, Charlie. That award, do you know the amount that comes with that award? 4 million Ghana cedis. Put it there. Yesterday, put together a very nice suit. Well, and as you do that, kindly, you know, activate the phone lines for me. 0559-242-717, 0556-910-154. Should Erik ten Hag be sacked as Manchester United coach after the 3-0 disappointing result today against Tottenham Hotspur? United don't look too good in the Premier League, and also even in Europe, many are asking questions. How would they survive against Porto? We'll be getting into that. Babel, congratulations to you.
Thank you, Kelvin.
Please tell us, how are you able to, you know, achieve this? Let us know. Let the world know. How did this come by? Many are saying, someone, you know, texted me and was like, is he disabled? And I'm like, yes, please. He's a fully fledged gentleman. Bill.
Yeah, I got similar questions as well. And so I had to give clarification. And this is for everybody who wants clarification on that. So I did a number of stories, of course, special stories on you know, a number of issues. And some of the stories I did was on disabled people who are participating in sports. And one story that really struck out was about Gilbert Ampia, who is a GHS student and also a high jumper. He lost his leg when he was born, unfortunately. But he has found solace in high jumping and has been doing that in the Kumfi Atta in the central region. He's someone that even the Paralympic Committee is looking at integrating into their team because of how good he is. He was winning competitions upon competitions in the central region. And so I did a story on him. And it's not just the GGA that has recognized this story, actually. The AIPS also recognized this story, made me top five, fifth in the world for young reporters and third in Africa because of this story. And so this is why I'm getting the Disability Reporter Journalist of the Year, that story.
Well, that is Millicent for you. That story is what has gotten him thus far. So congratulations to Millicent, the voice of Millicent. I'll be giving him that opportunity to start the show as well with us. Bill, Tottenham 3, Manchester United 0. United sinking deeper and deeper. Is it time for Erik ten Hag to go?
I think it's understandable if United decide to sack him. First of all, they've literally backed him in the last two or so seasons. They've spent about £600 million for him to bring in a number of players in. And one thing about him is a lot of the players he signed are either Dutch or have played in Dutch clubs. So that's his preference for his team. Understandable. He's brought them in. We've seen Onana come in. We've seen De Ligt come in. We've seen Lisandro Martinez come in. We've seen Mason Mount, who even played in Eredivisie at some point, also come in. We've seen Hoyland come in. We've seen Mazraoui come in. All are his players, the players that he needed, and he booted some players out. But, as I said at the beginning of the season, if you remember, I highlighted this thing. Ten Hag isn't the kind of manager who raises the level of players.
Mm-hmm.
I'll keep saying it. He's not that kind. He will maintain your level, or he will make you drop. It's one of them. And literally depends on the player and his mentality and how he approaches the game. Because Ten Hag isn't the kind of guy who would help you raise your level as a footballer. I am sorry. He's not that kind of guy. He's never been the guy, and he will never be that guy. And so if Manchester United really are serious about rebuilding the club to a level where they can challenge for the Premier League, they can go back to the Champions League and want to challenge for the Champions League title, then I'm sorry, Erik ten Hag is not your man. And you are seeing it today.
Erik ten Hag is not the man. Bill agrees that he should be shoot the door. Yes, he should just walk out of the door. Andrew Sifai is here, and as well as Samuel. Yes, Samuel Annan is also here. Andrew, this is, you know, Manchester United situation.
Yeah, Kelvin, for Manchester United, it looks like two steps forward, three steps backwards. And if you look at the game against Spurs today, which they lost by 2-0, for the first goal that Mickey van der Ven assisted, it shouldn't come by because he's a defender. He picks the ball from just outside or before the halfway line. He drives upfield and then he just squares the ball across goal. Andre Onana is rooted to the spot in his goal, and then Brennan Johnson tucks it home far post, and then they take the lead. So this has been the story of Manchester United so far. The way they started the game in itself showed that they weren't up for the fight. The body language of the players, Marcus Rashford losing the ball high up the field, not really tracking back to win the ball, and it panned out like that. The red card also did go against them. Bruno Fernandes' red card in the first half meant that the wind was taken out of their sails. They couldn't put up the needed fight that they needed to show in the second half. And you'd bear with me that United, when the season started, people were making a noise that they were progressing this season, because if you look at the way they were playing this season, they created a lot of chances, or they've created a lot of chances so far, but they've been missing a lot of opportunities. So their problems, it looks like there's a problem high up the pitch. So there's a problem at the attacking third when it comes to United. And it looked like they have solved their problems defensively. They hadn't conceded until they conceded against 20 in the Europa League.
Yeah.
So it looked like defensively they were picking up from where Ten Hag started when he came in his first season until 20 scored that goal. And in this game, it showed that United's woes are still there. That gap between the attack, midfield and defense is still big. And Ugarte alone cannot solve that problem. Casemiro does not have the legs. We do know that he doesn't have the legs. But if you bring in a player like Ugarte and you just leave him to solve the whole midfield problem alone. He isn't able to do that. He needs more legs by him. And I don't think Kobbie Mainoo gives Ugarte what he needs in that midfield. I know it's an unpopular opinion, but I don't think Kobbie Mainoo does enough in Manchester United midfield. And you said that they were overrun by Spurs, and Spurs were without one of their most influential players in Son. And they were able to achieve this result, 3-0 hammering at Old Trafford. I don't recall the last time. Maybe that when they did beat Manchester United by 6-1, that was the last time that Spurs won convincingly at Old Trafford. But it's rare to see Spurs beating United at Old Trafford. Even when they do beat United, it has to be at the London Stadium. But to beat them like this and convincingly, I think I've long backed Erik ten Hag to be in the dugout of Manchester United. Yeah. But I feel his time is up. He has to go. He has to leave Manchester United. And probably Ruud van Nistelrooy will take the step up as caretaker manager until maybe if Thomas Tuchel will be given the full-time job.
So Andrews also believes that Erik ten Hag should be shown the exit. Well, Samuel Annan joins us for the first time here. Sami has been, you know, a regular here with us at Three Sports at our event. Yes, he came to, you know, play in the FIFA. The way he was lashed, the boy make him cry. But he's back here again. You know, we met at Accra Sports Stadium before the Black Stars went to Kumasi to play against Angola, and he also shared his thoughts on what he had seen at training. So today he's here with us. I won't let you go on the Erik ten Hag tangent, but we saw a red card, which, you know, many think that it influenced, you know, the game not to suit, you know, Manchester United. But do you agree whether that it should have been just a yellow card and that caused the further deterioration of the Manchester United team?
Okay, thank you for the question. I feel that the red card was a bit harsh on United and Bruno Fernandes as a whole, but honestly, United have a bit of problem in terms of leadership on the pitch, because I don't see Bruno as a good leader in the team. Yeah. And I don't see a good leader in the team at the moment. Mm-hmm. After Ronaldo was stripped of his captaincy, with that whole banter between Ronaldo and Erik ten Hag, I haven't seen any captain who has been able to hold this team on the pitch.
Yeah.
And off the pitch, I'm not sure Ten Hag is also doing well in terms of getting a good leader in the team.
Yeah.
So I feel United needs a stronger leader in the team. And the red card given to Bruno, I feel, was a bit too harsh on United. And it was one of the reasons why United could have lost. Maybe he could have given a brilliant pass. And as Ten Hag was saying during the post match conference, maybe he could have started a comeback. But I feel like even though he was on, I didn't see much of an impact he was having in the team. So
true.
It didn't really
matter, you know. So yes, he thinks that that red card wasn't too fair, but you know, I can see Bill and then Andrew's shaking their
My own is, as long as he's off, he's off. But about the leadership issue with Bruno Fernandes, I agree. I really agree. We've had a number of situations where we've seen Bruno Fernandes moaning about things he shouldn't moan about on the pitch, and shouting at players when he should actually be encouraging them when they make like simple mistakes and all of that.
Yeah.
You know, leadership, when it comes to leadership, fine, there's a point where you can have a go at the player. So, but usually you do that in private, where you explain to him, you make him understand that you don't make some mistakes like this and that. But when you're doing it on the pitch, you just deflate the confidence of the player. He ends up playing badly, and that affects the team as a whole. And that is something that Bruno doesn't seemingly understand as a captain and as a leader of the team. And that is to the detriment of Manchester United. I think even Harry Maguire is a better leader than Bruno Fernandes, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
As Harry Maguire was the leader under Solskjaer, everything was looking more settled, calmer, and Manchester United were at least getting results.
Yeah.
But putting Bruno under this spotlight, it's just been chaotic. And that is something that I'll blame Ten Hag for, because he put him in that position.
True.
And I'll also blame Ten Hag for his tactics and, you know, all the decisions he's made as a manager. So I think he should go. Bruno shouldn't be captain. I don't understand in which world how Bruno is the captain of Manchester United. He shouldn't be. It's never done. We've seen captains in Manchester United.
Yeah.
We've seen Rooney take the armband at some point as a leader. We've seen Evra as a leader at some point. Rio Ferdinand at some point. Proper leaders. Roy Keane, proper leader.
Yeah.
Not this one.
All right.
There's Three Sports, the best sports team in the country. Get interactive with us across all social media platforms on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Three Sports GH.
Welcome back from the break. This is Sports Ultras here on 3FM 92.7. We had to take a quick break and then we are back on the show. Don't forget the audio version of Sports Ultras is available as a podcast on all podcast channels on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all RSS feeds. You can catch up all the previous shows there, including this one. We'll be getting into the other issues of the Premier League, but let me take away these messages on Facebook. If you are listening to us and you want to see the visuals of what we are talking about, join us on Facebook, 3FM 92.7, 3FM 92.7. Well, Nanotri says, good evening, guys. He is the head of sports at OM Radio at NNM. Very wonderful and educative show. Very informative as well. Well, thank you. Yes, hopefully one day you're going to join us. Nanotri, thank you so much. And this is Ayamba Samson. Good evening, Ayamba. I don't think Ten Hag will be the first coach to be sacked. So this is a message from Ayamba. He's also saying that he doesn't think Ten Hag will be the first manager to be sacked. Well, we wait to see how things are going to pan out. But let's get into the other issues of the Premier League. Newcastle settled for a 1-1 draw against Manchester City. Arsenal defeated Leicester by 4-2. Chelsea 4, Brighton 2. Cole Palmer scoring 4 to go top of the goal scorers chart. And he becomes, you know, the first player to score 4 goals before halftime in the first 45 minutes of a Premier League game. That is incredible. Wolverhampton Wanderers also suffered a 2-1 loss to Liverpool at home. Bill, which of these games are you picking?
I think I'll pick City versus Newcastle.
All right.
Yeah.
Is City missing Rodri, and Haaland was blanked for the first time this season. He was virtually stopped in that Newcastle defense. Did they pick lessons from Saliba and Gabriel?
I think they did. And also, Newcastle at St. James's Park are a very tough nut to crack. They've showed that against a lot of the big teams in the Premier League. Even against Arsenal last season, I remember that controversial goal that Aaron Gordon scored against Arsenal, but they still won and all of that. So Newcastle have always shown that they are tough at their home against big teams. And we saw that against Manchester City. I think the missing Rodri part was always going to happen. A statistic for you. Mm-hmm. Apart from the fact that he went 52 games with Manchester City unbeaten before the injury, there was also 3 instances that Manchester City lost.
Yeah.
And all those 3 instances, Rodri wasn't available. There was no Rodri as they lost.
Yeah.
So this was just like a little bit of a teaser as to what we could see potentially happen. Of course, there's always the Kovacic who tackles and all of that. But let's not forget that Rodri was the perfect shield for Manchester City. There's a reason why he's the best DM in the world. Nobody else can match him. The closest right now is Declan Rice. Apart from him, nobody else. He's just number one when it comes to the rule right now in the world. And losing someone who is number one, a specialist and the best in the world at that position, it will definitely hurt you. And we are seeing it hurt them. For the first time, I saw all of City's 10 outfield players in the box defending Newcastle. They said Arsenal are using dark cards.
Yeah.
What are City using now?
With 11 men or 11?
11.
All 11 in the penalty area.
I don't know. Are they using dark cards too?
Well, that is a question from Bill Lichet. As if Bill has spoken about the Man City, so I would want to discard that. Let's move on to the others.
Yeah.
There is Arsenal, there is Chelsea, there is Wolves, Liverpool.
Yeah, I'll touch on the Chelsea game because, as you indicated, Cole Palmer was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he scored 4 goals in the first half. Mm-hmm. I don't think we would ever see something like this in our lifetime. And the way he took his 3rd goal showed that he's a player on top of his game. The free kick, the manner in which he took the free kick, and the precision and also the accuracy show that Cole Palmer is definitely cut for the top. To go from a player who was on Man City's bench and now he's bossing it up at Chelsea shows that he's really on top of. But I want to take this from the managerial perspective because if you'd remember, Enzo Maresca, when he came to Chelsea, they picked up just 1 win in preseason and we're all ridiculing Chelsea that it's going to be a long season for them.
Mm-hmm.
And fast forward, I'll say Chelsea are ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
And it's not just about the results. It's about the performances. They are churning out the results, and they are also performing in a way which coincides with the results. So they are putting up the performances, and they are also racking up the results. So yeah, it's going well for Chelsea, and I'll call them outside title favorites. And the reason why I'm saying this is because if you look at the other teams who are in contention for the league, and they are just an injury or two away from probably bustling it or not being in contention anymore. If you look at Chelsea, in every position, they have that depth there. If you look at the attacking line, you can pick out Jackson from the attack. You replace him with Nkunku. You can take out Cole Palmer. Joao Felix will slot in perfectly. You can take out Pedro Neto on the left. Jadon Sancho will slot in.
Yeah.
Madueke on the right. Mudryk would slot in. At the middle of the pitch, Romeo Lavia is in there. Moises Caicedo, Chukwuemeka at the back. Cucurella, they have Marlo Gusto, they have a lot of options for Fana, Levy Colwell. So it means that Chelsea, due to the options that they have, I see them that Maresca, if he's able to get more consistency in his side, I think they can mount up a title charge.
No.
Probably. I'm not saying this that they would, but then I just think they
might. But they're in good position. This is early days in the season.
Yeah, they might have an outside chance of posing a threat to the big boys.
Hmm. Well, that is from Safer. But let me ask you, do you think Pep Guardiola would regret that? Come on, Cole Palmer could have been the perfect replacement for Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, he would. Because in this moment where, you know, a player like Erling Haaland really relies on service, and we saw how Haaland, he was a pedestrian in the game against Newcastle. If he doesn't get the service, he's any other player. He's a Lukaku, he's whoever you compare him to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if Haaland is not getting... If the service isn't coming, he's just a pedestrian. He does nothing in the game. And you just see him bumping into challenges, trying to pick up a fight here and there. Haaland does nothing. And Cole Palmer, he's shown that he has the most goal contribution since he moved to Chelsea, even more than the games he has played in terms of Premier League. So it shows that Cole Palmer is really flourishing. And Pep Guardiola, he doesn't really make wrong choices, but this is one of the very few ones that he's gotten wrong since he moved to Manchester City.
Well, this is one of the very few ones that he's gotten wrong since he moved to Manchester City. Well, it's left with Arsenal and then Liverpool. You know, which one are you going to pick?
I think I'll choose Liverpool.
All right, sure.
Liverpool's goal that they conceded was a poor one because the defense, Konate was missing. Alisson, I don't know what went wrong. I think there was a communication problem there between his defenders and he himself.
Yeah.
And Wolves took it as an opportunity to get back into the game. And going forward, I feel like Liverpool and Slot should try and like get his forwards to score goals, because after Luis Diaz and Salah tank mute in games, it's like they struggled to get it. This time it was Konate and a penalty that saved Liverpool.
Don't you think he will be glad? Because if you are having all departments of the team getting in goals, it helps you. If Rodri wasn't scoring last season, Vardio wasn't scoring last season, Manchester City would have struggled.
Yeah, sometimes it's good, but when you have to get players who should be consistent in terms of goal scoring.
But Salah has been.
Yes, but of late, he has been down.
Okay, not prolific as he used to be. Okay.
After the Sadio Mane issue, Sadio Mane leaving, and the trio broke up, it's more like Liverpool have been totally dominant on Salah to get the goals. But they also have strikers like Darwin there, who hasn't been the best.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to train harder. Jota, due to his injuries, we haven't seen the best out of him.
Okay.
But he's one player we should look out for.
Okay.
Diaz has a problem with finishing, in my view. Because sometimes he gets in clean, but just fails to get the goal or the ball behind the net. So I feel like Liverpool should really work on their forwards and midfield.
Liverpool should work on their forwards and midfield. I'll be coming to Bale for the Arsenal game. He's going to finish up, but Siva, Andy, I should ask you this. Yeah. Is Gravenberch the best midfielder this season so far?
Yeah. Per what we've seen so far, he's proven that he's the best. Per what he has, because he's come up against Manchester United at Old Trafford, and he completely buzzed it away from home at Molineux, where it's been a tough ground for big sides, and he also dominated over there. So he's proven that he slotted in well for Arne Slot. So it's... for the beginning of the season, he's shown that, okay, he has it in him too. But it's about the consistency. Can he keep it up until the end of the season? If he gets an injury, how would Liverpool fare? So it's about maintaining consistency and going till the end. But so far, so good. I think Gravenberch is ahead of... The midfielders are not even there in the league. Who would you call? Kevin De Bruyne is out for Manchester City. You look at Arsenal, Martin Odegaard too. He hasn't really been on form and he's even sidelined with injury. Manchester United have nobody. And it's Chelsea that maybe you can mention Cole Palmer, who plays higher up the pitch than Gravenberch. So for central midfielders, I think Gravenberch, he has done a phenomenal job so far.
Gravenberch has done a phenomenal job so far. Bill, it had to take Arsenal
a
deflected effort in added time.
Yeah.
And then, do I see a ricochet of Kai Havertz to give them a 4-2 win over Leicester City?
Yeah, very labored effort. And it also highlights how much Arteta has depended on Odegaard for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's gotten to a point where he has to figure out a system where Odegaard is non-existent, and that will be difficult, especially when you made him a captain, your chief creator, and all of that. I mean, he was like the full package for Arteta. We saw that in two seasons ago. We saw that last season. A lot of the attacking phases was just passing through Odegaard. Now we don't have that element again, and it's more or less like trying to find, you know, a different balance using Martinelli and Trossard switching wings, and Trossard now, you know, trying to play as the attacking midfielder, all of that. I think it's just it's a combination of things that Arteta is trying to figure out. I think when he gets that,
mm-hmm.
Arsenal will become even more unpredictable.
Yeah.
I feel personally that we became a bit more predictable with Odegaard in the side. We had to flow a lot of the attack through him, but now it's becoming more or less a mixture of stuff. Use Odegaard, use Martinelli, use Kai Havertz, and see what they can produce. But I think all in all, Arsenal Arteta will be happy with the win, even though it was labored, even though it didn't have to get to this point where Leicester City got that equalizer. Even the first goal they scored, it was just a messy situation altogether to bring them back into the game. But overall, he'll be very happy that Arsenal at least did not drop points again at home.
Mm-hmm.
After what we saw against Brighton with the red card, with Rice and all that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So not dropping the points is good. It's a good thing for Arsenal. It still keeps Arsenal in the title race early in the season, third place, you know, just about a couple of points behind Liverpool, which is good.
Yeah, because, just a point.
Yeah, just a point, which is very, very good. Getting into the international break where the players can reset, where potentially we can see Mikel Merino back, and then brings another dimension to Arteta's, you know, midfield play and possibly the attack play. So I think all in all, it's just a good result for Arteta and Arsenal.
Well, somebody says, Kelvin, please open the phone lines again. The Chelsea fans.
Hey.
Manchester United were laughing at us that we have 100 players.
Wow.
Now look at them. We have 13 points this season. They have 7.
Get interactive with us across all social media platforms. On Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at 3SportsGH.
Welcome back from the break. There's a Sports Ultras here on 3FM 92.7. My name is Kelvin. Also, I'm here with Samia, Bilishan, and then Andy. We have been delving into the Premier League. But there is a matter of interest in the Premier League. Mohamed Kudus. Yesterday, he was substituted. And after the game, he was substituted just on the, you know, the first period mark or getting into the second half. So after the game, questions were asked manager Julen Lopetegui how and why he took off Mohamed Kudus. And Lopetegui said, or his statement suggested that it was a tactical decision. I was thinking we need that. I was thinking that was better for the team, and we needed these kinds of changes. The second half, we worked as a team. Many think that this statement is no geared towards telling Mohamed Kudus he is not a team player, which many have said, especially when it comes to the Black Stars, and even when he's in the Premier League, people talk about it that Kudus seems to be not a team player and wants to do things on his own. My gentlemen are still here with me, and they'll be getting into the discussions to tell us. But Augustin Boateng, yes, Opele, he says, oh, yes, Chelsea is winning the Premier League. Opele, we here. Kwame Taylor says, good evening, guys. My name is Christian from Teshi. Today is my first time listening to your program, and I'm enjoying it. Good job to you guys, especially Samo. So you have an admirer. Nana Edutu to Oscar. It is this guy. Okay, well, we'll meet the things this guy can do, but let me leave it for here. Bill,
yeah,
this is what Lopetegui has said about the substitution he made yesterday. After 45 minutes, Kudus was off the game, and then West Ham fought back to at least secure a draw.
Yeah. When a coach makes you a scapegoat in any situation, you are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Big trouble. Very big trouble. And in this case, he's made Kudus a scapegoat. Now, the next step will be for the coach, especially once he's made the statement, he's going to back it up by benching him. He will definitely bench Kudus. And if in turn he benches Kudus and West Ham United start winning games, then I will be sorry for Kudus. But his spell at West Ham this season would end automatically. The moment the coach starts winning, when Kudus is on the bench, that will be the regular theme. He will basically be proven right that Kudus is not a team player. He looks out for himself. And so he doesn't fit my system. And again, Lopetegui is the kind of guy who likes possession-based football. Mm-hmm. Everybody is involved. Everybody is pressing. Everybody is just passing to each other, you know, creating triangles and trying to create chances. Kudus, we know, is not that kind of guy. He likes to take the ball, dribble as many players as he can. If he spots a pass that he can make, which he usually doesn't make as much, he will make it. And if there's a chance for him to shoot, he will shoot. We know Kudus, he will like to shoot and like to score. And we've seen him try as many shots this season. It's not falling for him. He's not scored a goal this season, which to me is sad because it puts even more pressure on him now. And now there's this, you know, external pressure from the coach that he's not a team player, and so the team works better as a team when he's not there. It just puts him in a very, very tight corner, in my opinion. But the good thing is, international break is coming. Black Stars has a doubleheader against Sudan. Mm-hmm. At least that's a point for him to reset and try and get a goal or two to give him some confidence on his return to West Ham. But if he doesn't put in good performances with the Black Stars this international window, he will be in very huge trouble. And I am getting scared for him because of the kind of spotlight we've placed in him over the last 2 years. We basically made a consensus that he's the best player we have currently in this team, the Black Stars.
Yeah.
So if he's not playing well, then a lot of pressure now comes to the other players. Now we would have, you know, we'll be scrambling for who will be the best among the team. And it just would go downhill from there. So I think Kudus, try and keep your head up. You come to the international break, try and get some goals, try and get some assists, go back to West Ham and see how you can pick up from there and convince Lopetegui that you are not just the guy who would want to dribble and all of that, but you can, you know, play multiple roles and try and affect the game in other ways to make the coach happy. It's that simple. Because if the coach starts dropping you and he starts winning, my friend, you'll be in trouble.
Mohamed Kudus, yes, if the coach starts dropping you, you are going to be in huge trouble. Andy?
Yeah, Kelvin, I would like to go by the numbers.
Okay.
For Mohamed Kudus, this is his third longest goal scoring drought in the Premier League. His highest being 9 games, and he scored on the 30th of March against Newcastle.
But it came with assists.
Yeah,
even though he hadn't scored assists.
Yeah, he was assisting.
All right.
And his second being 7 games, scoring on the final day of last season against Manchester City.
Yeah.
This is his third, going 6 games without scoring. And he doesn't even look like scoring. That is the worry now, because previously he looked like scoring. I know he has a goal ruled out for offside against Chelsea.
Yes.
He hits a post against Manchester City. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Kudus doesn't look like scoring. And I don't blame Kudus. Let's go to the manager. We saw West Ham fans were delighted that they were getting a manager in Julian Lopetegui, who was coming to replace David Moyes, who was seen as a pragmatic coach. And Julian Lopetegui comes into the job. He gets his signings on board. He signs the likes of Crescencio Somerville from Leeds. He gets Niklas Füllkrug, and he gets other players on board. What is the tactical look of West Ham? I don't think there's any tactical plan. It doesn't differ from what David Moyes was offering. Lopetegui style is supposed to be an expansive brand of football, but I don't see it. Maybe you see it, but I don't see what Lopetegui is trying to instill in this team. It's six games, and I put Lopetegui up there with Ten Hag as the managers who are most likely to lose their jobs. First managerial casualty this season, Lopetegui is up there with Eric Ten Hag. I don't know what he is trying to build with this team. If you go for a player in Niklas Füllkrug, he's over 30. If you look at their focal points, Füllkrug is over 30, Danny Ings is over 30, Mikel Antonio is 34 years. So how do you have sharpness in this attack? Crescencio Somerville is the only player who offers pace up front. Even Mohamed Kudus, he isn't that fast. Jared Bowen, who is also their goal-getter, isn't also as fast. So you look at this team and you don't know what West Ham want to build with it. Lucas Paqueta in midfield, he has also been a pale shadow of himself all season. Suchek has scored 2 goals. He's their highest goal scorer this season in the Premier League. Thomas Suchek has also not been firing on all cylinders. Jared Bowen has just a goal in the league. So it's not just about Mohamed Kudus. And as Bill said, he's just being scapegoated here because the whole team isn't functioning and they are conceding so many goals. Against Chelsea could have blown them apart in the first half last week. And West Ham, they don't know what to do. And I don't think it has to do with Mohamed Kudus. Everything has to do with the coach of the side, who is Julian Lopetegui. He's under pressure and he's just trying to pin everything on Kudus. I want to ask you something. West Ham conceded 5 goals against Liverpool in the EFL Cup. Was Mohamed Kudus on the pitch? He wasn't. So how then do you come back to tell us that Mohamed Kudus, when he was taken off, the team played well as a unit? While you conceded 5 when he was on the bench against Liverpool during midweek. So I don't think it has to do with Mohamed Kudus. Even though Kudus is not on form, I think that the coach is trying to put too many of the blame on him.
It's trouble for Kudus. I don't know, but I'll open the phone lines once again. You know, what do you make of the situation of Mohamed Kudus now? Do you think he needs to change his style? Do you think he needs to suit how his manager how his manager wants him to play? Or you think the coach is just no good and is trying to, you at least, make players scapegoat for this situation? Sammy, yes, I just get in before I open the phone lines.
I feel I agree completely with what Andy said, but you see, right now West Ham doesn't have anything to offer in the Premier League because they don't have a style of play. They don't have anything to show. And Lopetegui as a manager, when he was in Wolves, we didn't even see the impact he put on that team. Like, he was just there. So I feel Lopetegui isn't the right man for the job, in my perspective. And I feel that as a player, Kudus should try and change his style and probably, you know, adapt to that system just to be at the safe side, get enough game time and to expose himself to the fans and make his coach happy, if that's what the coach wants. And he should try his possible best to get some goals during the...
But don't you think the coach is just trying to apportion blame? Because this West Ham team hasn't really gelled in much.
Yeah. If you look at Kudus, he's been playing out of position. I say this because Moyes wasn't playing him where Lopetegui is trying to play him on the pitch. And he's coming at the back of his best goal scoring season under a manager. He's scored 14 goals under Moyes. This is his best ever. And then you're telling me that the next season he's just falling off. Prior to the season, he made statements that he wants to perform better than he did last season. And I think Lopetegui is having problems, not just with Kudus, but playing his players at the rightful positions. It's a problem for West Ham United.
It's a problem for West Ham United. But let me open the phone line. 0559-242-717. 0556-910-154. Is it Lopetegui trying to make Kudus a scapegoat? Or you think Kudus genuinely needs to change his style? And it hasn't helped him this season. Kudus is struggling, not even assists, you know. Unlike last season, if he wasn't scoring, he was, you know, at least putting in the assist. Maybe 2 or 3 games he was getting in there, but you know, he's struggling this time around. I don't know how he's going to come, you know, good. But maybe Lopetegui understands, you know, this thing better than we do. Kudus is selfish and not a team player, as Lopetegui is trying to say. Or you think the coach is just covering up by using Kudus as a scapegoat? Sammy, you just have a few seconds and then so we'll move away from that.
In my perspective, I feel like Kudus is a team player in my perspective. Just that sometimes he likes to, you know, take on some players and sometimes he overdoes it.
Yeah.
But even when he overdoes it, he tries to put in his very best in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And most games we've seen, even the past AFCON we played, you saw how he gave his best. During that time, he was even not fully fit, but he gave his 100% best to the team.
Okay.
So I believe he's a team player.
Well, yes, Sami believes that Kudus is a team player, and maybe the coach is just trying to cover up. Julian Lopetegui, well, you still need to do better. Your team doesn't look good at all, Charlie. You are making our man struggle, so please behave. Well, the Madrid derby is on this evening. Jan Oblak is in post for Atletico Madrid. Reinildo, Ruben Lenoma, Jose Maria Jimenez are in defense. Manuel Molina on the right-hand side of that five-man midfield. Marcos Llorente on the left-hand side. And in the middle, there's Rodrigo De Paul, Konogara in there. Antoine Griezmann playing just ahead of them with Alexander Sholoth, and then Julian Alvarez playing as the two men up front. So a 3-5-2 for Diego Simeone and his men. But for Real Madrid, there's Thibaut Courtois, there's Dani Carvajal, there's Eder Militao, Antonio Rudiger, and Ferland Mendy completing that back four. Luka Modric, Aurélien Tchouaméni, Federico Valverde in midfield, Jude Bellingham playing right behind Vinicius Jr. and Rodrigo with the absence of Kylian Mbappe. Bill, where do you see this game ending?
Real Madrid, let's go Madrid. I think missing Kylian Mbappe might be a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. Good because they can revert back to similarly their old system last season, where Jude Bellingham was literally on the tip of the attacking line with Vinicius on the left, Rodrigo on the right. I think there was that understanding, and Jude Bellingham could score a lot more goals when he was there. Bad thing because this team this season was starting to gel. They were starting to understand each other with that front three of Jude Bellingham at the CAM, Vinicius on the left, Mbappe on the central, and then Rodrigo on the right. There was a bit of understanding that was seemingly building between these four. Vinicius knew he could take the left side. Mbappe knew that he had to stay central most of the time. If he's going to take the left, he has to communicate with Vinicius and they switch. And Rodrigo knew he had to take the right. And so it just becomes a bit more problematic because with a team, when you try and introduce them to something new and they are starting to gel and one of the key players get injured, you try to revert to something older, it's not seemingly straightforward. You know, it takes time for them to, you know, get back to that old system and understand it again, and then, you know, click, and then, you know, get that victory. But reports are stating that Diego Simeone might play Haram Ball again, fielding a back five. So that also goes to show that he has a bit of respect for Real Madrid, even without Kylian Mbappe. So that is something that Real Madrid can capitalize on. And hey, that gives Endrick a chance to show the world that he's truly the Bobby Charlton of this time. And can score goals from Bobby Charlton of this time. And can score goals from anywhere and everywhere at any point in time. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a very beautiful one, full of physicality between the two sides, because that's what a Madrid derby always brings. When it comes to goals, I think both sides will probably find a goal. As to who would win, I think it's too tough to call. It might end up in a draw for me.
It might end up in a draw, according to Billy Shen. Sammy?
Yeah, so I feel Mbappe being on the being sidelined due to injury gives Endrick the chance to shine. As he claims, he loved Bobby Charlton. It's time to bring out the Bobby Charlton in him and prove to the world he's here. But this derby, we all know that this derby is one of the, in Spain, it's probably the second most favorite derby, the Atletico Real Madrid derby. It's always fun. We see goals, we see crazy tackles, it's just exciting. And hopefully this game, Madrid can get a win and continue that title challenge and in their hope to regain or retain their title against Barcelona.
Well, let's see. Andy, Do you side with him?
Kelvin, you look at Diego Simeone and you know he's a defensive coach throughout the years. You've seen how he set up his sides. And this season, they've been very impressive. They have the most clean sheets so far. They've kept 5 clean sheets and they've conceded the least goals. They've conceded 3 times. So if you look at this Real Madrid team without Mbappe, who has also scored the most goals for them in the La Liga, how would they be able to go past this Atletico Madrid defense? And you look at the players in their side and you see Luka Modric, who is miles off the piece in terms of he doesn't have the legs to be running anymore. He has, but for him, luckily for him, he has Tchouaméni by himself, and also he has Valverde to rely on. And Real Madrid will be looking to rely on the pace of Vinicius Junior and Rodrigo, so they'll be looking for the ball over the top. But for Atletico Madrid, how we know them, they are not a team who like to push high up the field and play a high line, so they'll be sitting back. And if they are sitting back, it means Real Madrid would be limited to shooting from afar. And from shooting from afar, I think they have the experts in there, the likes of Modric, Valverde. They can shoot from afar. Even Bellingham, he showed in the last Clasico, his first Clasico against Barca, that when push comes to shove, he can really shoot from afar. So I think it has a draw written all over it. As we've said here, it's very difficult to call this one, but I think it would end in a draw. And with Real Madrid also eyeing Barcelona's record of the most unbeaten record in the La Liga, they would also fancy this one of pushing it all the way and probably to the Clasico and beating them and clinching that record.
Well, it's going to be a very cagey encounter. But, you know, gentlemen, we are just going to run through predictions. But in the Spanish La Liga, Osasuna defeated Barcelona by 4-2. Siva, let me still, starting with you.
Yeah.
Hansi Flick, the rotation, do you think that it hurt him?
Yeah, I'll pin it on the rotation. Why would you rotate your squad at this vital point? Because you are going to Osasuna, it's a side who hadn't lost at home all season, and then you drop Lamine Yamal, who's been brilliant, you drop Rafinha, and then you expect to get the 3 points against them. I think Barca got what they deserve in that particular game. I don't know how you would win the game without Yamal in the team and also without Rafinha in the team. So the scoreline was a true reflection of how the game panned out. 4-2 for Osasuna, even though there are memories coming out of that game that Osasuna's third goal shouldn't have stood because of a foul, and the referees in La Liga in unison that the goal shouldn't have stood and all that. I think Barcelona were fairly beaten on the day, and it spells an end to their unbeaten start, and also it dooms their chances of equaling their best starts to the season.
Well, let's see how things are going to pan out. But these were the words of Hansi Flick. The reason why he decided to put Lamine Yamal and what's his name, Rafinha,
that
Stormont boy,
yes,
put them on the bench. Let's take a listen to Hansi Flick.
Well, it's playing the game now. We have to accept this defeat because we are playing not so well. So it had some reasons, and I think it's my responsibility. I took care about some players because they had many minutes played before. I don't expect that we are playing like this. But it's okay. It's okay. I said to the team, hey, now we go on. We play on Tuesday. We play on Sunday, and we go on our way. And I think we are on the right way. Yeah, we made
you're on the right way. You lose to you sit down and do you are on the right way. You're on the right way.
Trust Flick.
Are you there? Were other interesting matches in the CAF Super Cup on Friday. Zamalek this time around triumphed over Al Ahly on penalties, 4-3. It ended after 1-1 in regulation time. And in Germany, Bayer Leverkusen settled for a 1-1 draw against FC Bayern Munich. Well, that was also a very interesting game. Probably, I don't know, that boy. That guy has some very wonderful foot that, I don't know, well, he's a product of FC Bayern Munich and he's stayed there all his life. Let's hope and see how he's going to pan out. It's now time for us to get to the local league. Let's look at that goal. You know, yes, these are these Bill.
Yeah.
Do you think, is it Pavlovich or?
Pavlovich.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that gentleman.
Yeah.
If you look at, you know, how his performances are, and then some players Manchester United have Ugarte,
Oh, Pavlovich, I'm sorry. Ugarte, I think Manchester United overpaid for him. They overpaid. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why Enrique barely played him last season. He just doesn't fit. I mean, fine, he can defend, he can tackle. But in the modern game, you have to do way more than just defending and tackle. You have to know how to pass too. That is what we've seen from Rodri. That is what we've seen from Rice. That is what we've seen from some of the best defensive midfielders of the game these days. Ugarte is not that guy.
Ugarte is not that guy. Che Bar for Austin. Kudos, guys, watching from London, Chelsea, all the way. Well, thank you so much, Che Bar for. It's now time to get into the Ghana Premier League.
Our own Ghana Premier League is back again. I say this is our own. Let's cherish our own. Division One League is back again. This is our own. Let's cherish our own. Ghana Premier League is back again. This is our own. Let's cherish our own. Women's Premier League is back again. I don't see a day what dog can want.
But today they were fighting at the Golden City Park. Brekum Chelsea fans at halftime decided to attack the referee. Some Kotoko players were caught in the melee, but after the game, the referees had to be just whisked away with the help of a tram. What do we call it, Pragia? You people are laughing. That was what happened.
But this Ghana Premier League, Haven't we seen enough of hooliganism issues in this league? Are we not tired? These are some of the things that push.
You want to be tired of the Ghana Premier League?
But me, I want to.
If I get me some of the videos when Kotoko and then the likes were entering the stadium, they had to full game and all. I'll get you that video of what actually transpired in the dressing room during halftime.
But I know there's drama when it comes to the Ghana Premier League. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine to have some drama. But not this. This one is like, Charlie, you want to hurt somebody. Why?
You
want to hurt a referee. Why?
These
are some of the things that drive fans away from stadiums. If, you know, a level-headed fan who just wants to come and watch a game of football, enjoy it, and then go home, gets to hear that, you know, fans are attacking referees, you know, he'll be afraid to tell his child that, Charlie, this place is safe to go and watch a match. You know, those times back in 2002, when my dad used to take me to the Lenkley Sports Stadium, it was safe. That's why he was taking me there, because he knew that it was going to be football that we were going to enjoy. From Ashanti Gold, you know, we enjoy beautiful football, no fights, no legalism. We just go home, you know, smiling and all of that. But now, Charlie, that motivation is no longer there. Because, Charlie, some Indiana fans will go and beat some player somewhere. Or Brekum Chelsea will go and fight referee. Last season, too. We remember it's Watcherman versus what team? The team that was relegated.
Buffo.
Also another fight happened over there. And Maxo Kunedu had to be rushed to the hospital. How do you
sell this? It's too early in the season. Just 4 games and people have started
How do you sell this? You can't sell this to corporate Ghana and tell them that let them come and invest.
Nobody will come. We need to behave. Well, let's start from the results. On Saturday, Accra Lions defeated Samatex by 3-1. The CAF Confederation Cup campaigners, 3-1. We'll come to the other result, but Bill, were you surprised that Nswatcheman, after all, you know, the experience in Africa,
they were lashed. The beating is just too small. They were lashed. 3-1 lashed. But yeah, I think it sort of affected them negatively going into the CAF Confederation Cup. I think RS Constantine showed them a level that they realized that, I mean, they are not at that level yet. And then again, I mentioned this the last time, losing Maxwell Konedu was going to hurt you anyway. He was that guy with that kind of experience who could take a team like Nswatcheman to Africa and really compete and compete well. It didn't look like they were competing against Constantine. They were battered by Constantine, and then they are coming back to Ghana. Accra Lions that has lost some of the key youth players. We've seen David Odro go to Barcelona and all of that. They're also lashing you. Then it's not going to look good for you. So Nswatcheman need to buckle up. Yao Preko would face a lot of questions, I'm sure. But he should find a way to motivate his boys to, you know, get a comeback. I think it will take some time for them to get over that CAF Confederation Cup loss.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe in the next 2-3 weeks they might get over that and then, you know, start to get to winning games. But I don't think they should go all the way to relegating. That would be a very big blow to Nsoatreman.
That is going to be a very big blow to Nsoatreman. Now let's get into some other results. Bechem United defeated Dreams FC by a goal to nil this afternoon. Samatex were playing their first home game of the season. They defeated Vision 2-1. Brekum Chelsea won at Asante Kotoko 1. The opener was scored by Chejam now before Zakaria Fuseni equalized. Hearts of Lions settling for another draw against BBNA Ghost Stars. So Stephen Frimpong Manson, if you watch GPL Express on Saturday, you heard him and his targets. He's been overly cautious, but he went there to battle Bashir Hayford to a goalless draw. Leicester City suffered a 2-0 loss at the hands of Karela United. Karela, who have been poor, traveled all the way to beat Legon City. Hey, Legon City, and I said Leicester. I'm giving them Leicester.
You've given them
I'm
Leicester.
Sorry. Legon City nil. Karela United 2. Young Apostles won their first ever game. I don't know whether they were buoyed by that result against Kotoko to defeat Adriana 3-2. And then Holy Stars, Baseke. Hey, Alfred Echimenza, your team, you people, you are losing. Holy Stars won, Medeama SC 2. And Medeama starting the season very brightly. Yeah. Nations Football Club nil, Accra Hearts of Oak nil. Bill, any picks before you take leave of us? We know you quickly need to go and sort a few things out.
Nations Hearts of Oak. I think that was a game that was going to be tough for Abubakar Ouattara, knowing that Nations FC haven't lost a home game since the start of last season. The record still stands, but it's good for him that at least he got a draw at Abrankesi, because that ground is a tough ground for anybody who goes there.
They haven't lost a game since last season.
Yeah, since the start of last season.
And that is that last season was their first time playing in the Premier League.
So That in itself should be something that should delight Abubakar Ouattara. This he can explain to fans that yes, it's Nations FC, is a team that at their home they are literally unbeatable, and we've managed to get a draw. So please give me more time, and I can, you know, get results in other games when I come at home or go away in other games. I personally didn't expect Hearts of Oak to really get anything out of it. So getting that 1 point, I think, is a really, really good one for them. And it's something that they should be proud of. Medeama versus Holy Stars. Medeama have started really, really well. I think they're a team to watch this season. They might battle for that league title again, just as they did in the 2022-23 season. They might battle for it once again. Medeama is a team to watch. Having Diawusi Taylor and, you know, other guys in the team, I think they are building something really special. And to get a 100% record, you know, after 3 games at the start of the season, it's not something you see often, because usually when you go away from home, you drop points in the Ghana Premier League. But they've gone away and they've actually gotten 3 points. And so, really commendable start for that is Medeama SC. And that is something that they should be really, really happy about. Samatex defeating Vision SC, bouncing back from that CAF Champions League defeat, you know, against the Raja Casablanca, and then coming back to get that 2-1 victory. I think it's really good for them. It shows that mentally they are strong enough to still compete in the Ghana Premier League. So it's good signs. And the NC Trade Sports Stadium, it's a ground that, you know, they've made a fortress. So getting a result over there just reinforces that pit. And so we'll see how it builds up from there. But good results for these clubs. Samatex, Hearts of Oak especially, very good one for them, and Medeama SC.
Well, very good one for them, and especially Medeama SC. Yeah, Seva.
Yeah, Kel, now let me touch briefly on Accra Hearts of Oak, because I feel, after the results against Bechem United, for Hearts of Oak, they should feel that this is a point end at Nations FC rather than 2 points dropped, because we know about Nations FC, how formidable they've been at home. They've not lost at home, and in our 18 games, they've not lost at home. So for Abubakar Ouattara, going by the numbers, he's now played 20 games as Accra Hearts of Oak manager. He's won 7 of them, he's lost 9, and he's drawn 4. So he has his losses outweigh his wins. So for Hearts of Oak, it's brilliant. And to touch briefly on Medeama too, even the season that they won the league, which is the 2022-23 season, they didn't start as well as they have. After four games at this same juncture when they won the league, they had 6 points. But at this point, they've won all their matches so far. So it shows you that Medeama SC, they have started brightly, and Nebojsa Kakpo, he knows what he wants from his team, yeah. And he knows where he's taking his team to. So I'll say kudos to Medeama, and they are doing brilliantly. Even be it on the road, be it at home, they are pulling their weight, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go on to win the league.
Well, that is from Andy. He wouldn't be surprised if they go on to win the league. I'll be giving you the videos of what transpired in Brekum during halftime and then just after the game. But, Sammy, the league is getting much more exciting. You know, it's interesting. Holy Stars, Medeama, very strong result. But Ediana, Young Apostles, defeating them 3-2. And Karela winning against Legon Cities. What is happening to Parkwes if I've been in Legon Cities?
You know, sometimes in the league, you just have to take it slow. But this time, it's just been behind. Like, Legon Cities are far behind.
Yeah.
We've seen them go being threatened by relegation seasons before. And this season, the way they are playing, I wouldn't be shocked if they are relegated, because they haven't really proved what they want to do. And we need to see that urgency, that sense of urgency in the team. That would and the coach needs to motivate his players. Mm-hmm. But it feels like there's lack of motivation in the team. I don't know what might be transpiring behind the scenes in the dressing room, but they have dropped in terms of the way they play.
Mm. Well, the way they play hasn't been impressive. Well, these were the happenings. Just after the game, you see military men trying to protect the referees when they were whisked away from the stadium in, do I say, the tricycles. And then they had to protect them. At this point, they had to call for military to protect football referees after a game to prevent fans from beating them. So you look at the Ghana Premier League table. Medeama with 9 points, 100% record. Gold Stars 7, Heart of Lions 6, Nations 6, Kotoko 5. But Kotoko have a game in hand that they will play on Wednesday against, I think it's in Swatcherman. Yes, they play against in Swatcherman. But there is also another game for Medeama. They are also going to play an outstanding game. Brother. So Young Apostles have 5 points. Brekum Chelsea 5 points. Vision 5 points. Bechem United 5 points. That is the position from 7 to 9, 10th to that is 14th. There is Holy Stars, Karela United, Accra Lions, Samatex, and then Accra had to focus with 4 points. And then 15th is in Swatcherman, 3 points, but they have two games in hand. For Dreams FC, they lie 16th with 3 points. Abdul Karim Zito, Adriana FC also have 2 points, and then Legon Cities with just a point. What is happening to Zito and his team?
Yeah, Abdul Karim Zito, I feel they've not fully recovered from last season. What happened? Getting to the end of the season, especially when they were knocked out from the CAF Confederations Cup, we saw that they were never the same, and they went on to lose the semi-final of the MTN FA Cup against Bofakwatano, and in the league they were struggling and they managed to escape relegation. And I think it rolled on to this season. They've not yet kicked into gear. I watched a game against Heart of Lions before this game, and I'll say they were lucky to get a point in that particular game. I feel they'll come good, but it will take some time. Probably in the next two games they would pick up and then they would come good, because Dreams FC, they've maintained core of their players. They have a good side, even though they've lost one or two, but then they still have a decent side to finish in the top half of the table.
They have a good side and they can finish in the top half of the table. That is all time will allow us. News on 3news.com as well as 3SportsGH across all the socials. We will see you tomorrow morning when Billishan comes your way with Sports on Sunrise here on 3FM 92.7. Have a good evening.